Hello, patrons. Welcome to episode 2 post-game chat for Roleplay Blades. We talked about this a little bit on stream, but just to reiterate it, I guess I will ask, what did you guys think about downtime and like learning the process, and you know, what was your feeling about like what you do during downtime as a thing, and also like learning the game in front of everybody on stream and doing that part of it?
I have to gush again. It's going to sound like a commercial for your game, John, but whatever it is. But I love how gamey it feels. I love that it is obviously on the further side of like roll for that. Tell me what you're rolling. It's definitely the mechanical side of this game that is also very narrative. But I also, like I've said also like 15 times, but I do like in addition that it gets narrative as well. Like Anne's scene becomes way cooler when she's talking her way out or implementing her character and how she would get out of that situation. The whatever relationship you want to call it between Aldo and Carol is forming, where the two of them are out working together as well. Like that to me is really cool. And I do see us in the future spending a lot less time on that. Like once we understand the mechanics of it and just be like, all right, let me describe how we're going to go about this. Right. Okay. Well, here's how you're going to roll for it. This is risky or whatever. And I just think that's going to be super fun. It's really cool to go from mega intense murder to slow it down. Still some intensity, still some resolve, but more mechanical. I think that's a really cool multimedia approach almost.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think I can see it in the future, you know, taking a lot less time because we don't have to necessarily set the scene of, you know, the apartment and here, you know, we have to introduce Kellen, who we've never talked about before, and, you know, explain what she does and all that stuff too. Like, that's just kind of all extra background that the next time we do downtime, I can just say like, I go to my apartment and Kellen and I get high, and we don't like have to like have this whole conversation about like the tree and everything, which are like really cool details to have, but people will just know that that's the setting that we're in, and we don't have to spend all the time describing it. But it is cool to like have all of that in my mind, and I'm sure as a viewer too, to have all of that kind of narrative description of what's going on.
I think it's important to know that during the downtime, like this is the, like downtime does not mean we're not role playing. I mean, a lot of people get really too combat focused on role playing, and that's not like what this, like it doesn't seem like that's what this particular system is about. It's about, I'm sure there's jobs to do and there's, you know, scores to be had, but part of the fun and part of the enjoyment that comes from this is from role-playing certain downtime moments that have nothing to do with killing anybody or, you know, robbing anybody.
Yeah.
I agree.
It builds context and gets us closer to the value of the action of killing someone, as opposed to just like constantly killing people. It starts to become silly and loses value.
I'm a really big fan of downtime, even though this is our first one, because it makes me realize the min-max potential of the game. And that's always something that's really interesting to me. And if you look at like previous characters played, there's always sort of evidence of that. It's like, what risks can I take that I might be able to mitigate later? So, you know, I kind of in episode 1 was doing that with my stress, knowing that there was going to be an opportunity to do it. Now that I've experienced it, of course, I can see the good and the bad from it, right? I could see that one roll to clear your stress and then just being like, fuck. but I like the ability to pick and choose, you know, the areas where I could potentially go, okay, this would be really bad if this, you know, went this way. So I am willing to spend the extra stress in order to do it that way. So I'm like a huge fan of this because it seems like the frequency in which it comes and what that allows us to do during a score is, you know, is really intriguing.
Yeah, cool. That's definitely something that like people who are kind of gamers first, they pick that up a lot better. People that are new to role playing often have so much overhead, and just in terms of like playing a character and thinking about a fictional world, and like it's like too much mental space to also min-max. But you guys are so seasoned at that, even though this game is new to you, you don't necessarily need to spend huge amounts of brain power on role playing because you've done that a lot already. And it's cool to see you like immediately picking up those threads and being like, okay, I see how the game works. I see how the systems play here. And that will of course drive the game a little harder. It's a, that feedback loop, you know, of risk and reward that the game is all about. You know, you want, there's nothing certain, there's, and that's what I like as a game designer. You don't, in some games, you do want min-maxing to be certain and reliable and solid. You want your build order in StarCraft to play out. It needs to be reliable and consistent, and like stuff can't just suddenly change. But in an RPG like this, I think it's fun to have things be dicey, you know, where you can't just push a button and always get the same result. You're going to have to like roll with trouble. And
right.
Like we talked about last time, that Han Solo thing where you root for characters that are in trouble and you kind of don't like characters that are just dominant all the time. Yeah. they're the jerks of the world. So yeah, it's cool. It's very exciting for me. I've run this game a lot for veterans, but I've also run it a lot for like new players. And it's very rewarding to run it for new players and see them get it. But I gotta say, it's nice when that happens really early.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's very fun to see you guys pick it up so fast. It's great for me as a GM. I can push a little harder. And
I do have a question about entanglements, right? Because we just got a taste of what it could be. And
yeah.
I mean, Heat, seems, I guess that depending on your playbook, the assassins are always going to be ones that incur the most heat simply because there's typically killing involved.
There is a special ability that removes that, actually.
Right.
But yes, in general, yes. Yeah.
But my question is actually, the net, it's actually, what weren't we considering it? It's a crew ability, right? Like,
yeah.
It's like less heat per thing. But anyway,
it's called Crow's Veil.
Yeah. My question's about entanglements. Mm-hmm. Can you give us an idea of just how bad this can fuck us?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's why it's there. Like, it could just be called, like, how are you going to get fucked in the next score? But it's called entanglements.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, the way that they fuck you is they just happen. And then you have to deal with them. Because there's a thing that the reason they're done the way they are in the game, you've probably seen this in gaming a lot. A party of PCs will die before they get captured under any circumstances at all, including like come down and pay your parking fines. They will like murder every cop to keep from doing that, or to keep, you know, the players just have this thing inside them that's like, no. And so there are all these tricks for GMs, like, oh, you can start off your campaign where everyone's captured in the jail and they have to escape from the jail, and that'll be fun, because that will never happen again in your game. Going to prison, getting captured, anything like that where you introduce the possibility, it turns into an action scene and a running gun battle and people burn down the district and like it's just fucking crazy. But in the world of Blades in the Dark, you guys are career criminals. You're in and out of jail all the time. It's just the normal course of your lives. You have people coming to you and demanding that you pay your debts. And I wanted to push that stuff into the background as like the normal business of being a criminal. So we can focus on the scores as the main action. And then the entanglements are just things that they just happen, and you got to fucking deal with them. I don't knock on the door and be like, hello, we're the Bluecoats. We're here to take you in for questioning. Cause then it's a fucking fight. Right.
Right.
So that's the way the entanglements screw you is I just say, okay, they arrested you. You're in the jail. Now here you are, deal with it.
Yeah.
But I don't shut it down at that point. I don't say, yeah, now, and you can't do anything about it. And like with Antonite, the entanglement caused her to be in the interrogation room with no role or anything, but then she could deal with the problem however she wanted.
Right.
So it's mean in that sense. I don't give you a role to like not get interrogated.
Yeah.
It just happens. But none of the possible entanglements are like losing your character type problems.
Mm-hmm. Right. So
you don't have to worry about that.
There will be no sort of insta-death as in, you know,
no.
Okay. As a result of
yeah.
Speaking of like insta death and basically like your character like retiring and stuff like that. I like that there's kind of an underlying clock put on your character. Like you have, like there is, you take steps towards like not being able to do this shit anymore and stuff like that. And then, I mean, there's obviously ways that you can like take that, take the clock back a little bit, but it lends a sense of like, these guys are not going to last forever. So you better take steps in order to like make either make the most of it or to try and slow the clock down as much as you can.
Yeah.
I wanted to give players like me, I'm one of those players that because I'm a GM primarily, I think I like to my friend Avery says, treat your character like a stolen car. That's how I tend to play. I tend to just be like, yeah, like let's do this. And my guy's the one who dies, or my guy's the one who goes to jail or whatever. And then I make a new character and join the team with my new guy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I should make a game that where you can do that. Like that's a totally viable way to play the game, but I didn't want it to be the only way to play. So there is that option for people who are like, no, I've made my guy. This is the guy I want to play forever. I'm gonna shepherd this person through their trials and protect them and make sure that they retire.
That's me.
That's fine. Yeah, that's hard mode. That's hard mode of the game. You know, if you got to take that on, it's hard.
I'm never super gung ho. Or almost never super gung ho when it comes to a character, because I'm like, I've thought about how this guy grew up, how like his background, like where he's been, scars on his body and shit like that. Like this shit like goes through my head when I'm like laying down and trying to sleep. It's like, oh, that'd be great. Oh, that's my God. And so like that. And that's why I never like jump into or try, like hardly jump into a situation, because that I don't think I have a good chance of having a good outcome because I fall in love with these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like pretty much all of us just put like so much effort into these characters because we knew that there wasn't this like, they're not just going to be instantly ripped from us after like a week or like one job, you know, it takes a really long time. And there's a lot of like changes that can happen to your character through, you know, trauma, but they're not just going to get erased instantly. So I feel like that, I liked that because it made me feel comfortable putting more effort into Rune as a character, which makes me as a player in the game feel more attached to the story. Sure. Because I feel like I'm just like, well, whatever, because she's probably just going to die, so who cares?
Yeah. To change the topic for maybe our last question, I'd forget how long we do these actually, but I was curious. 20?
Something like that. 20.
Okay. 25. All right, cool. I was curious to hear your thoughts about the kind of like pseudo secrecy thing that we have going, where there's like partially open information, like meta, you might call it, like the players.
Yeah.
And then also partially hidden things. Like, what do you guys think about that
stuff? I don't know. I'd love to hear other roleplay experiences in this vein, but we actually started doing this quite a bit in Mirror Shades, where we were keeping information, from each other, in an effort to sort of, enhance the story and like the perception of what all the players were saying. And honestly, JP was the one who started it, because he would just be like, Adam, I'm like sending you something that like my card says, and like you won't even know when to until I say so. But you know, like there was actually one episode where Dodger was she'd been taken by this or by the Aztecs, I believe. And we all decided that because it was so crucial that we didn't know what the conversation was, because it would play into sort of the meeting again of the whole team. And that was one of the coolest fucking things we'd ever done, because like I got to go back and watch the episode and then be like, oh shit, like that's what they talked about. So I think that you can certainly go overboard with something like this, but there's also so much information that people get already that like keeping some secrets is pretty good.
Yeah. I think for me, being kind of new to role play, I like the idea of not knowing 100% of everything that's going on, because like your character wouldn't know 100% of everything that's going on. So I like the idea of like Carolus is off doing something and has got some like surreptitious things that he's doing or planning in the background, and Rune is just oblivious to it, you know, because she doesn't, you know, she's kind of single-minded in this pursuit of like killing Skurlock and doing drugs. So she's just like, well, whatever else is going to get me to my goals, you know? So I like, even as a player, just not knowing and just having you be like, all right, well, I'm like planning this and I'm planning this with this other person and we're not going to reveal it to everyone. And it, I think it makes the story better for me even to like react to it naturally rather than being like, oh yes, that thing you mentioned 2 weeks ago, now we're going to like role play it or whatever. Cause I'm sure that there's things about like, there's even things that I've planned for my character and like her backstory that I haven't like really talked about with everyone else. And I think it'll be really fun for me to be like, and now the reveal, you know, like here's the moment. So
I think there's, it's something that you should put thought into and can, as everyone's saying, and I especially agree with Anne that, and we, that it enhances the story. Like it's kind of fun having that intrigue and mystery, but it's also, it becomes less fun when it's overabundant and almost like malicious a little bit. Not malicious is kind of the wrong word. Just, I don't think any of us would do that to each other, but like, it's not as fun if there's just unending secrets and it's like, yeah, you know, well, my character's got this thing now and I'm going to mess with you too, John. But when it comes up,
it gets,
I like it. I like it as like a, we keep referring, and I think, you know, got to give some credit to Adam for this. I think it's kind of him that started this, at least for me. The idea of viewing these shows as a, like an actual show, mm-hmm, it was always going to come out what my vice was. I was never going to be like, well, you forced it from me. Here it is. It's just more fun that it's like, yeah, it's really fucking disturbing. It's supposed to give you an idea of how evil probably Carolus Firm is. And it's, and then like, there's some other stuff that's touched on as well. The absolute plan is that that comes out completely naturally. And it's supposed to just make it more exciting and fun, as opposed to, well, if my team doesn't know this, that puts me in a point of leverage against them. Like, then it becomes not as fun, in my opinion.
I think the nail on the head there. Sorry, Zeke, go ahead.
No, I think we're all experienced enough role players to know, and/slash entertainers to know, like, when it's appropriate. Like, we're not gonna have, like, it's not gonna be like squeezing blood from a turn. Like, I don't want to tell the chat them my secret. It's like, you know, we're experienced enough to say like, this is important, it'll come out in time, and if it doesn't, we'll give it a nudge forward.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think the fun of secrets is in the revealing of secrets, not in the keeping of secrets.
Right.
And so you need to have a secret to reveal one. So it's necessary in that sense. But I think a lot of GMs in general too, like when, especially when they're first starting out, they keep secrets just to keep secrets. Like, it's like fun to keep them or something, or they feel like they don't want to give everything away, or they have some instinct that it's going to be, they're going to reveal too much or something like that. And I think it's the reveals that are fun. Like, and that's a great point, Zeke, like for an entertainment medium, doing those reveals is the fun part, and doing them the right way too. Like, we saw this thing with Firm tonight that was a reveal, but it also kind of wasn't a reveal. It introduces more questions. Like, why does he have this shrine? What is he doing? You know? So
just the reaction from chat was fucking beautiful. All just like, oh God, what is, he seems like this car salesman, but he's a fucking.
Well, like, even I knew like what your vice was, but I didn't know the full, you know, like extent of everything, and all the details that you added into it just made it like so much crazier. And like, you guys were talking about Westworld at the beginning of the show, which like I haven't watched, but that idea of it just taking too long to get to the point. Mm. Like, I've definitely watched shows and movies like that where it's like, okay, like you're hinting at this forever and ever and ever, like, and you're just teasing us and like stringing us along. And I feel like sometimes keeping secrets can kind of lend to that, you know, where you're just like, just get to the point already, you
know? Yeah, totally.
So, yeah, it can backfire too if the reveal is not as big as your buildup.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, you take too long and then people expect this huge thing, and it's like, meh.
We're looking at you, No Man's Sky.
Oh geez.
Well, cool. I think we're all on the same page there. There's a lot of ways to play that with secrets, whether they're open or not. And I feel like we're getting into a place where we're vibing. We're like doing the way we want to do it. So,
well, and one thing I thought was like super duper surprising that I was like, well, I mean, of course the chat would want to know what like the role is and what the outcome is. And the chat was like, mystery, leave it in the dark, secret, leave it. It's okay. And I was like, blown away by that. I was like, really? You guys don't want to know? You want it? Okay, cool. That's fucking awesome.
That was surprising. I like that. Yeah, that was cool.
What were you going to say, Wheat?
No, I was going to say anything.
Oh, okay. I think we have our illustrious host, JP McDaniel, has a question that he would like to ask.
Do it.
So, Anne, you started off with an accent. We talked about it after last episode. I told you it would help you, at least in my interest, or my experiences, rather, get into character more. Did it help at all? It seemed like it did, at least from watching. I don't know. What did you think, Anne?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we only did the one episode without an accent, and
I mean, you played Balance of Power as well without one, so.
Yeah, I've never done an accent for a character before, and so that's why I was super nervous, like, trying that for the first time, and I tried to, like, comfort myself with the idea of, like, England doesn't exist, so I can't do a bad English accent because England isn't a thing. So, and I honestly, to be honest, I watched a lot of videos of Emma Watson like talking to just try and like, I would
that's
just copy her.
It, yeah.
Yeah,
that's was, like, super talking, good.
I would,
yeah,
like say what she was saying. So it was cool to see, you know, like a lot of the response from chat was super positive, and I definitely felt more like, you know, here's Anne talking about what she's going to do, and then here's Rune like having her moment in the story. So yeah, definitely. I'm glad that I followed your advice on that one, because I was like really resistant when JP was like, maybe you should try this. And
it's one of the most awkward things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's already awkward enough that you guys are role playing in front of a bunch of people sometimes for the first time, but to go out there and do a fucking voice that you've never done before and you're not comfortable to begin with is rough.
I would normally 100% agree with you, JP, but actually, like, Zeke has constantly hit a home run, and Anne just seems like a fucking natural as well, so it doesn't feel awkward at all to me. Like,
No. I'm saying it's just chilling. Awkward in general, not their voices.
Yeah.
I'm saying it's awkward in general to do what they're doing to begin with, but they're knocking out of the park. Yeah. Yeah.
No, they're killing.
I actually wanted to ask you a quick question, Anne, because I've done a lot of accents for like local theater stage shit, and do you have a phrase in your head that gets you into the accent? Because there's a lot of things that, like, a lot of times when I'm doing like an Irish, something like that, like I have one phrase in my head that goes, okay, I'm in it. I can do it. Like for this, honestly, it's just the title of the show and saying it like them, Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders. Like gets me into the accent.
Nice.
Well, I watched a video on like how to speak with an English accent, like by this guy who like is English or whatever. And he just would say like words in English and just like, or with an accent, and have you like repeat them while watching it. So, so I watched that. And as I mentioned, I watched Emma Watson's like UN speech, like right before we went into the show. So it wasn't so much like one phrase, but it was like watching this like 4-minute video or whatever of her talking, like 20 minutes before we were going to go live, and just repeating like every line, like letting her say a line, pausing it, saying it, and just like going line by line. So,
I puttered around my house just trying to get the right accent. Yeah. Just walking around, I'm going to get some milk, I'm going to pour myself a coffee, you know, shit like that.
When I like take my dog for walks and I just like talk to her about like the environment and stuff in like an English accent. So.
Yep. Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
Zeke, question for you. Are you going to be the resistance in the group, or are you going to be the force that pushes back to the group members? Because I hope you keep that up.
Here's the thing.
Because I was that for the longest time, and it's one of the most fun positions.
I love how this is playing out, because there's definitely a rift between Carolus and Aldo, because
what?
No, I'm just saying, like, Carolus treats Aldo in a certain fashion that Aldo doesn't necessarily appreciate, but he's not Carolus has not shown his physical prowess yet. So I'm not really scared of him yet, or I don't think he's formidable. Like, my size just shows everybody things, whereas Carolus has not like slashed anybody or, you know, done anything like super physical.
Right.
So I like that there's kind of a rift growing there, but I'm not super intimidated or, you know, like worried about it. And I also like the friendship that's budding between Rune and Aldo as well. Like, even though we're completely different kind of mindsets.
Yeah.
I think we've started to hit it off and get along a little bit. But yeah, I love being like kind of the pushback, like, don't treat me like shit. Just I'm not an idiot. Just because I look and sound like one, maybe sometimes. Like, I'm not. I mean, like there's a phrase in Montana, country don't mean dumb.
Mm-hmm. That's a good phrase. I like that. I'm gonna steal that phrase. I'm gonna use that on a future.
Like that phrase says don't mean dumb, which is important.
Yeah. That's the best part. That's all I had. So that'll do it for this video. So I'm excited for episode 3, which I think is next Tuesday, as long as everyone's good with that. Yeah. Yep. We'll talk about and confirm it.
So
that's it. Cool. Thanks for putting on Blades. Okay. I enjoyed it. I'll watch next week as well because I produced the damn thing, so I kind of have to. We're out. We'll see you guys next time.
Endorsement.
Yeah, exactly. Peace.
Bye.